Welcome to Band of Gamers Podcast, episode 19. My name is Greylock3491, and this week I'm joined by DBQ Hams.
Hello again.
And Zeus Adamus.
Howdy.
Welcome back, guys. It's always great to talk to you and to do the podcast with you. Let's jump right into it. We're going to start with Zeus. What have you been playing in the last... give us the highlights. What have you been playing the last couple of weeks?
So, I'm in a bit of a slightly unique situation because I just got done moving. So, so what I'm playing isn't quite my norm. I checked out Spartan Strike, or Halo Spartan Strike, which I think is available for Xbox. I guess one, maybe also 360. I'm not sure, but it's also available on Steam, and it's also available as a Windows 8 game. So, I've been writing recently about some of the games that are available for Windows 8, you know, out of the Microsoft Store, which is kind of like the Mac Store for OS X on Macs, and kind of looks like a store for mobile apps, you know, kind of like they are on your phone. So I gave that a quick whirl and wrote a little bit about that. And the other thing that's been going on is I've been setting up my new, I call it my nerd command center in the basement of the new house. So one of the things that's going on here is I actually have all of my tech stuffed into one room because it will accommodate it. And so it's the first time that I've had my consoles connected to the best TV that I own with the surround sound system. And it took a little doing because I haven't really run that configuration, but I got the consoles going into the TV and the TV going out to the receiver for surround sound. So mainly just to kind of op test the surround sound setup. I played a little Need for Speed Hot Pursuit on the PlayStation 3, and then also some Forza Horizons 2 on the Xbox One.
Cool. So Zeus, what brought you back to Need for Speed Hot Pursuit? Just itching for getting ready for Forza, or was it something that drew you back in there?
So a little bit of both. Definitely, I have been on a... let me break out a bunch of my racing games, because obviously Forza Motorsport 6 is launching this week. But, you know, I think I've been playing the Need for Speed franchise. I think the only one that I missed was the first one, and then there have been a couple that I've deliberately skipped. But I generally wind up playing the Need for Speed franchise iterations almost universally, and out of you know, EA is kind of starting to settle into this theme of. There are kind of some specific versions of Need for Speed. There's the Hot Pursuit, there's the Most Wanted, and then there's kind of their underground-oriented releases, which I guess this year's Need for Speed is going to kind of be oriented around the underground style of gameplay. But I pretty much always play those, and Hot Pursuit is definitely my favorite. I didn't get enough of playing the Hot Pursuit version that came out for console generation 6 on the PlayStation 2, and so I was tickled pink when Hot Pursuit came out for the PlayStation 3, and so I still continue to plug away at that one. I just kind of never get tired of those.
So does it feel like a breath of fresh air to have it connected to a new setup with better TV and surround sound? Does it bring new life back to those games?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, I kicked myself. I've kicked myself for the last two console generations, maybe three, that I continuously get these things and then connect them to TVs that don't really do them justice. So, you know, I had my Xbox 360 connected to, like, a 20-inch Polaroid, like, 480p TV for, like, the first year and a half, which was just ridiculous. So I've got them now connected to a 50-inch plasma 1080p with surround sound. And just, it's a vastly improved gameplay experience. So Gray, I see. I think I heard that you've also been playing, reimmersing yourself in the Forza franchise. So have you been playing that, and what else have you been gaming on?
Thanks, Zeus. Yeah, I can kind of sympathize with you because when I do the remote play on my Windows 10 computer, I definitely miss the fidelity of the sound. Wearing earbuds versus wearing surround sound headphones or the surround sound system, it's you lose so much. I think, it's like I was shocked how much I relied on the surround sound for, tactical purposes when I'm playing, So I totally hear you, and it just doesn't look as good on a little screen, Playing on a big screen is so I can kind of see what you're going through. I've taken the step backwards playing around with a remote play and kind of suffered. It's like, wow, I'm giving up a lot by doing this. But yeah, I figured, Forza 6 is out Tuesday. I've decided to get that. I'm not gonna get Taken King. I'm going to hold off on that and get Forza instead. And we got a number of guys at CAG getting it. And so yeah, I fired up Forza 5 and I was having some fun. And my goal is to drive clean. I'll never be number one. I'll never be the best tuner. I'll never have enough time to learn all the tweaks to make the car purr and be super best. But I want to drive clean. I don't want to, even the AI, I don't want to run them off the road. My whole goal is to become a better simulation driver. And so I've read a lot of the reviews that are out already on Forza 6, and I look forward to it, man. I'm really looking forward to it. So, now, did you say you were actually going to get it? I know you were talking. Are you going to pick it up on Tuesday, or are you going to hold off?
I do not know. I don't believe that I'll pick it up on Tuesday. One of the things about this generation and digital downloads, like there's no, like I feel no pressure or stress to like rush or like to be in sync with the Tuesday release. I'm like, why do I need to download it Tuesday if it's digital and I can download it when I'll just download it when I'm ready to play it. But yeah, I'm definitely planning on getting it. I'm planning on jumping back in, to those CAG racing nights. They were so incredibly fun back on the 360. I did want to ask you one thing. So now, so you have Forza 5, and you're kind of going back and experiencing that again. Did you play Horizons 2?
No, I had Horizons 1 and I loved it. But it's the same reason I didn't get Elder Scrolls Online. I barely scratched the surface of Skyrim. Those really immersive games I just don't typically have the time for. So I thought that, Forza 6, if I can get online with the guys, I won't be able to keep up with them, but I'll have fun, the camaraderie will be there, it'll just be good. I always enjoyed it in the past, just hopping in now and again, and I don't feel like I need to, because I'll be racing against myself and my own lap times, I don't feel like I have to learn so much or become, a master of the game. So that's why I didn't get Horizons 2, even though it got great reviews and it was extremely tempting. I love the open world stuff. I just can't be very good at it because I just don't have the time. Did you like Horizons 2? Did you really enjoy that game?
I did, and I do. The comment I made—I can't remember exactly where this week is. It's a little foot and mouth karma for me because I have historically talked about how much I dislike open world racing games. Like, I really just like look, just give me a map of all of the races. I mean, I was even fine with the way it was old school, where there's just like a list. I'm like, I just want to go through, pick my race, pick my car, monkey with a very small number of variables, and just race. Like, I don't need to physically drive from the hideout to the start of the race. It just doesn't do anything for me. But I really enjoy Horizons 2, and I've played it a ton more than Forza 5. So it's just kind of a little I don't know what you call it, but it's very weird and it's very antithetical to what I claimed verbally I felt about the games.
Yeah, I think Forza Horizon scratched a little bit of my itch for Burnout Paradise. DB and I talked about that in the last episode. What an epic game. I think it was the last episode. But the other thing I played, well, I played a little Minecraft with the grandkids. They always loved that. And then I played some Destiny 2.0, and we're actually going to focus on that in our third segment. But the one thing I'll say is 17 gig download, really. So I was kind of surprised about that, but I am excited about all the new features they put in there. Not that I expect to spend a lot more time in Destiny, but it's always fun. I actually created a new character and started. I actually got my new character because I wanted to hit a new Dinklebot or the new Nolan North bot. And Bobo and I were talking about this online earlier. When was it? Tuesday or Wednesday we were talking about it. Wednesday we were talking about it. It's like, what a letdown. We thought we were going to get, Drake from Uncharted, and instead we get this computerized voice. But we'll save all that talk for the final segment. And let me do this. Let me kick it over to DB. DB, what have you played? Give us the highlights of the last couple weeks.
So I also played the Wait for the Destiny download game on Tuesday. It was very exciting to start that giant download and then wait for it to install, and I ended up going to bed with it still installing, and so yeah, I did that. I'm happy to talk more about 2.0 in later segments. I did play quite a bit of it and had some both PvP Crucible stuff and some going out and trying some of the new bounties and subquests, so we can talk about that. And one of the things I did is, this is why I was asking you, Zeus, about TV setups, is that I had some company over and I ended up moving my Xbox One up to my 55-inch 1080p versus my 32-inch 720p one that it's usually hooked up to. And right, it's just night and day difference. I had my son came out and looked at it and he's like, wow. So yeah, it's amazing when you, like you said, Zeus, that you're paying money to experience those amazing immersive graphics and world, and to give it justice by the right display and sound setup. So yeah, I think I agree with you there. This week was Battlefield Hardline double XP, or at least part of the week. This month is Battlefest, so Battlefield 4 and Battlefield Hardlines. World Voyager from the CAG forums and I have been talking back and forth for the last week or so, kind of planning that this was gonna, we're gonna level up our characters, and I'm set to make my progression through the 40s up to the 50. And then Destiny 2.0 drops, and I kind of lose my mojo and end up spending more time playing Destiny than getting my double XP in Hardline. So, the other things I've been playing this week: on Friday, Super Mario Maker for the Nintendo Wii U came out, and my sons and I have been playing that this weekend. That has been really fun, really interesting. It is. There was the reviews have been overall positive. There's some criticism about the, that it takes 7 days to unlock everything, that you have to keep coming back. And this morning, talking to my sons, they had already set the clock ahead multiple days, so they're on day six after 2.5 days. So they're working their way through, getting unlocking everything, and the way it gates it is it gates it by, that Super Mario, the assets from Super Mario World for the Super Nintendo didn't unlock until day six. Day four or three was Mario 3, and so you start off with 8-bit Mario and the new Super Mario Brothers, like the Wii U kind of modern graphics. And you have the tile sets, you have the ability to kind of go in and start making. It's great. The interface is really fun. It's really straightforward. I've played around with, Little Big Planet and some others, and my kids have played RPG Maker and, of course, Minecraft. But the way that it uses the touchscreen on the gamepad is excellent. The UI there keeps all the tools in a relatively straightforward way. One of the things my son and I were talking about tonight is that one of the nice things about Mario is you know kind of the rule sets, you know the patterns and the behavior for almost all the enemies, right? Like, this enemy is going to bounce, this enemy is going to walk, this is going to go up and down in a pipe. You know, the logic for a lot of those things is kind of ingrained over 30 years of Mario. And so it made it really easy to kind of jump in and start making levels. I came home from running an errand this weekend, and my 10-year-old son ran up to me and, "Dad, the level that I made, people have downloaded it 11 times, right? Like, he's just floored that he made something that other people are trying out, you know, whether or not it ends up being good, but it's still, again, it becomes a good learning experience. And so they've been playing, you know, there are tons of user-created levels out there already. Some of them are knockoffs. You know, there's a Super Meat Boy one that my sons and I tried, and there's a couple other knockoffs. There's some big Rube Goldberg machines where, you know, you pop a mushroom out of a block and just kind of watch all these things happen. It's not necessarily massive platforms, but it's an interesting use of the tool set, is to see what people do with it. You know, the one thing that I hope Nintendo does with it is kind of what they've done with Splatoon, like keep rolling out some updates. You know, if there'd be a way to filter the user-created content, not just by, like, ranks or views, but maybe by the way that it's designed, or, you know, it should be interesting to see, is that if they work with that community to help it mature and really cultivate some good level design stuff, or if they just kind of let people dump whatever else they want on there as long as they didn't draw a picture of some body part, right? I mean, I think they have the ability to really make this a vibrant community, or just kind of let it be a dumping ground and move on to something else. So I hope that they have some community sense to build there. Otherwise, the game itself is fun. It's Mario, right? It's, if you enjoyed Mario at some point in time, this is just more of it. And it's fun. It's not super involved, or it could be as involved as you want, right? You could spend, my son spent hours making a level, and I spent 2 minutes trying to play it and going, okay, I'll try something else. And there's always something else to play. And so it's great. You know, it's really good. I've really enjoyed it. But I did not spend as much time on it as I thought, because I had planned to. Saturday morning at our house is kind of like Saturday morning cartoons were when I was growing up, where my sons wake up and play video games. I was going to get up with them and play some Mario Maker and enjoy that time. And I ended up spending about an hour and a half, almost 2 hours, playing a mobile game. playing the new Star Wars mobile game, Star Wars Uprising. Yeah, it's by Kabam or Kaboom Studios. Earlier this spring, I talked about a game called Spirit Lords, which was kind of like a Diablo-y type of game. This definitely feels like it's made by that same studio. And that's not a bad thing. You know, the gameplay is fine. It's kind of action RPG. You know, but I think it's the Star Wars hook, right? I put Spirit Lords down after a while because really it was just dungeons and demons and fantasy stuff. And the fact that there's a Star Wars hook, even if they're with characters that I have no idea about, it sucked me in for 2 hours. So I dropped $5 on it, picked up, you know, there's companions and there are weapons with different levels. I don't know, right? Maybe it's probably not going to get any more of my money, and whether or not it becomes a free-to-play grind, or if it becomes kind of a fun diversion in a Star Wars universe on my mobile device. So I'll keep you guys updated on that and see if it's there. But again, it's free. It's on iOS and Android, and if you're a Star Wars fan, it might be enough to hook you in. It may not be. But, so, a lot of stuff going on there. You know, the idea of that Uprising game, there is some, you know, you're collecting, like most free games, right? You're collecting and feeding and leveling up. weapons and characters, and that really kind of ties in with one of the news stories I wanted to bring up, that the idea of Pokemon Go, that there is... Did you guys see this? That Pokemon Go was announced by Nintendo and another company, not just by Game Freak, but the mobile company who kind of grew out of Google, and they created the game Ingress. Have you guys, Gray or Zeus, have you heard of Ingress?
I haven't.
Yeah, that's the Google game, right, that they kind of launched. That's like a real-world social geocaching kind of mashup, isn't it?
Yeah, that's pretty much exactly what it is, and I think your excitement level kind of seems the way I always thought about it, too. Like, if I lived in a big city, maybe it would be an interesting diversion, but yeah, it's the idea of, it's kind of your ARG, your you know, altered reality type of game where you're using GPS on your phone to get to certain control points or portals or however they're called to capture them and rank up. And, you know, I've heard people on other podcasts talk about it in terms of kind of the cult following of it. But basically Pokemon Go is take that idea and mash it up with the Nintendo 64 game Pokemon Snap, right? You're using real-world environments to kind of travel around and discover or capture new Pokemon or battle with other people. So I think that's an interesting use of the Pokemon license. Certainly is a good use of mobile, whether or not how they monetize it, right? After just talking about Star Wars and the microtransactions there of a free-to-play game, how they monetize this, if they release other generations with different price points, I don't know, but I think it's a really creative use of bringing games out into the physical world, and so I think that's a good piece, but, you know, that's for a certain audience. I think for a wider audience, Zeus, there's some big news going on at Apple this week, right? They had some kind of relatively important gaming announcements, or at least the potential for them. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah. I would personally not classify it as relatively important. I would certainly say it was quite disappointing and a significant shortfall from where I thought they would go. Which in certain cases is very similar to some of their other announcements of their products outside of gaming. I won't go into those tonight. But, you know, leading up to the Apple announcement, and this was the fall iPhone announcement. It's an iPhone-centric conference, typically. And they also released, you know, the iPad Pro and a few other things, and one of their updates was to the Apple TV, which has historically been referred to as a hobby level project for Apple. You know, and what they announced, and the rumors were leading up to the announcement that the new Apple TV was going to include a game controller. And of course, I was thinking that it might be something more gamepad like. What it wound up being was something very similar to the Wii wand motion control. There's a significant number of limitations with it as well for developers in terms of implementing it as a gaming control component. There are 6 buttons total on the face of the control in addition to a touch surface. Game developers can only access 2 of those buttons for game controls, and then the big kicker to me is that the apps are limited to a maximum size of 200 megabytes, and then additional content can be made available to the game via iCloud. I'm not sure how deep you guys are into mobile or how much time you've spent, getting into mobile games. And I know both of you have to a certain extent. But, you know, games on Android definitely, I don't recall sizes off the top of my head in iOS, but big games on Android are definitely over a gig. It's not unusual for me to have games that are 1.5 gigs on my Android phone. DB, were you going to comment on that?
Yeah, no, the Star Wars Uprising game is 1.3 gigs, you know, games like Republic, you know, even, you know, that's not even all the episodes of it, and it's a gig there because of the assets. Yeah, I'm, you know, you're right, Zeus, for a 200, 250, 300 megabyte limit, what's that performance going to look like if it has to pull down from the cloud?
Right, and I don't know for certain. You know, it could be that developers will figure out some ingenious way around it. You know, the only thing I can say is, you know, I'm looking over here to my right, and I've got my NVIDIA Shield Pro, Android TV gaming console sitting now connected to this plasma TV, and you know, the Pro unit comes with a 500 gig hard drive. I don't have to be worried about managing, game storage or anything on it. It's pretty much a cavernous hard drive, and I can download whatever I want to it, and the apps don't have that cap. Now, maybe Android games do have some cap. I don't know what it is, but it's certainly not 200 megabytes, apparently. The other thing that got announced was the iPhone. The new iPhones do incorporate some level of force touch. You know, Giant Bomb's article referred to it as 3D touch, and basically what it does is it provides three pressure-sensitive levels of input. So you can have a light touch, you can have kind of a 50% depression, and then you can have a full touch, which game developers can utilize as three different levels of control. I believe the intent is to allow, eventually, to allow iPhones to be part of the interactive control input to a gaming app on the Apple TV. If not, that force touch or 3D touch is certainly going to be available to game developers who are deploying gaming apps for the iPhone. So those were kind of the two major gaming-oriented announcements that came out of the Apple event this week.
So, Zeus, you know, I tossed it to you with saying there's major news. You kind of said, no, it's not so much. So, but I think, isn't part of the news the fact that it's not as much news as it could have been, you know, in terms of the market share that they could take on or the steps that they could make? You know, there's been how many years worth of kind of rumors and speculation and small steps into the gaming market. Is this just another one of those small steps, or is this a foundation for something else?
Well, there's definitely a level of curiosity of, you know, is this one of those things, which is not unusual for Apple, is this one of those things that they've announced which appears very benign and not very impactful on the industry that 2 or 3 years from now winds up being a really huge deal that just nobody could tell? I'll say yes, part of the news to me was the kind of flop that these announcements were. And the direct impact on me is, you know, as far as kind of being an amateur writer online, I saw the announcements. I ranted about it a little bit with the website staff that I work with in our chat, and then I just kind of buried my head and stayed away from articles about it on the internet because I was certain that every writer on the web was going to write the exact articles that I would have wanted to write, and I was like, well, everybody's going to cover it. Everybody's going to compare this thing to the NVIDIA Shield Pro, meaning the Apple TV, and say how the Apple TV and its gaming implementation that Apple announced doesn't measure up. you know, so yeah, it just kind of went over to me as a wet noodle. Definitely didn't match any of the rumors that preceded it. But of course, you know what Apple fans will say. And I'm not using that term as a derogatory term. What Apple fans would say is, hey, look, you know, Apple never promised anything big with gaming. This is just what they had. And so if people are disappointed by it, it's because they kind of, you know, wound themselves up that it was going to be some major thing beforehand.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. That it's more about the speculation and the what-ifs versus the reality. You know, I think that that's... could go on almost any gaming announcement, whether it's Destiny 2.0 or the what-ifs of fall releases. You know, whether it's hardware or software, we're more often more interested in the hope of something versus the reality of it.
You know, I'm just going to chime in here. I did not watch their press conference because I am not buying a new phone or a new tablet. I have an iPad 2 and I have an iPhone 5S, and they're both great. I don't need them to do anything else. That said, if they would have told me that they were coming out with the Apple TV for under $100 and I could sign in with my iTunes account and I could play all of my games that I've bought over the years on my iPad on the TV, or my grandkids could, I would be excited about that. I didn't hear that anywhere. I didn't hear that anywhere at all. So at this point I'm like, why bother? I don't know why they're missing. The big market here is you have people who have these iOS devices. They've bought a ton of games over time. If you want to put gaming on the Apple TV, why not just let it play what the iOS already plays? I mean, there's already such a huge catalog there. I mean, great. Give it the ability to do more as well. But that's where I thought Ouya was going to really shine, in the fact that they could take existing libraries and just make them available on the TV with a $100 console. So, I don't know, that's my two cents. I don't know if you guys want to comment on that, but those are my two cents on the whole Apple thing.
No, I think you're absolutely right. You know, the thing that's kind of a conundrum for me is they could have, and I should also mention, you know, the other thing with the new Apple TV is that it is running its own fork of iOS, which they are calling TVOS, which I'm fine with, because Android does the same thing. You know, Android TV is not the exact same operating system that you're running on your Android phone. And even though Google has been criticized for that, I've been okay with that. It kind of makes sense. There are some negatives to it, but they're on the fringe. The thing that I found most disappointing about the announcement for the Apple TV is, I'm like, kind of like you alluded to, Gray, the only thing they needed to do was just say, hey, you can now play your iOS games on the Apple TV, and if via one or two ways, you can either kind of cast them to the Apple TV from your iOS device and still use your iOS device to control it but have this display up on a larger screen, or if you want to bring your third-party controller, right, because there are tons of game controllers. I have one for my iOS devices made by Mad Catz, which is awesome. It's basically a 360 controller that interfaces with iOS. Apple could have just enabled the ability to play those games on a big screen with a third-party controller, and that, to me, would have catapulted the Apple TV into a key and core living room entertainment system gaming device. You know, but they elected to not do that. And in fact, I think I've seen documentation for this Apple TV capability to support games to a certain extent now that actually discourages developers from enabling third-party controller support. And that makes absolutely no sense to me whatsoever.
Yeah, I can definitely see there's millions of parents out there who let the kids play with their phones and would like to have their phones back when they're at home. And so, oh man, you could have had a $99 Apple TV, and then you could have had a $149 Apple TV with a controller, you know, and also supported third parties, but I mean, they could have moved a ton of units. They could have really, really moved a lot. I know. I mean, I know my daughter and her kids, my grandkids, they're constantly asking for her iPad or asking for her phone when they're bored, when mommy's in the grocery store. And wouldn't it be great if at home she could get her iPad back from them and let them use it on the TV, you know? I don't know what they're thinking. But you know, it's their company, I guess.
All right. So I think a story that that probably the three of us do find a very big deal in gaming. And we can kind of cover it really briefly because I'm pretty certain. Would I be wrong to say that all three of us are planning on playing the Battlefront beta when it drops next month?
I hope so.
Yeah, I'd love to hear details about how to make sure that I'm in it besides buying EA Access.
Well, that, to be quite honest, I'm not absolutely certain about. Let me ask you guys one more question before we get into it. Have you decided what platform you're going to be playing Battlefront on?
Xbox for the win.
So, I have it pre-ordered for Xbox, but I have been pricing out and looking at the PS4 Battlefront bundles.
No!
So, I haven't purchased anything yet, but in part, right now, I don't know that there's any PlayStation exclusive content. Is there?
It doesn't matter. You want to play with me, and I'm going to be on the Xbox.
Okay, Zeus, that you didn't need to hear Gray and I argue back and forth, but why do you ask the question?
Well, because I was very surprised to hear. I mean, I knew that Star Wars Battlefront was coming to the PC. I was very surprised to hear that the beta would come to the PC. I thought, at the same time as the betas for the PS4 and Xbox One, I thought almost with certainty that the beta time would either only be or would primarily be for the two major consoles, and that if there was a PC beta, you know, that it would be for a shorter duration. You know, so I'm giving definite thought to playing this on the PC.
So, yeah. Do you think that that's a representation of the amount of active Battlefield 4 users on the PC? I know that the Battlefield Hardline community on PC has been, you know, isn't big at all, but Battlefield 4 is still holding pretty good numbers. Is that potentially why they're throwing it to PC? Gray, you were going to say something else. What were you thinking about this?
Yeah, no, I was just going to jump in and say, when everybody I know, so all the people I know who are getting this, probably half of my 100-plus friends list, have said they're getting it on the Xbox. And the reason is, if you have an Xbox One, right, you don't have to worry. You know, not everybody has a gaming rig. As a matter of fact, most of my friends don't have gaming rigs. So if it's going to come out on both, you know that most of your friends are going to be on the Xbox One. Now, again, if you were a PlayStation gamer, I mean, you would definitely want to get it on the PlayStation. If all your friends were on the PlayStation, you know, definitely do it. My friends list is way, way heavier. I have, I would say, probably 30 times more games on the Xbox than I do on my PlayStation console. So that's why I'm saying, if it's going to come out on both, you know, I'm going to get it on the Xbox, you know, assuming almost all of my friends are going to get it on the Xbox. And that's my reasoning. Go ahead, Zeus. I'll let you jump in.
Yeah, I don't have any definitive speculation. The only thing I can guess is that EA elected with this release and maybe some others in this holiday season that with Windows 10 release, with the release of Windows 10 occurring kind of preceding this time frame, that PC sales and PC gaming would be kind of on an upswing. And DirectX 12, I can't remember if DirectX 12 is already packaged in Windows 10 or will be releasing fairly shortly. But there are some pretty interesting technology tidbits that are out there that might lead a company to think that that PC gaming would be on an upswing going into this holiday season. But what you mentioned, DB, just about the fervor and the support of the online community on the PC for these EA games, you know, Battlefront and Battlefield, I am not absolutely positive about. I'm pretty certain it's pretty strong, but that sounds like as good a theory as any.
I wonder too, right, if you had the right gaming rig, or just a good gaming rig, you know, DICE can really do wonders with that Frostbite engine. And so, you know, as we're just talking about earlier in the podcast multiple times, about putting it on the system that's going to give you the most immersive or the best experience. And so, you know, in Gray's case, that best experience is where the most of your friends are, but for some people, that best experience may be eye-dropping visuals, and your PC is probably going to ratchet up better than a PS4 or Xbox One is.
Well, definitely the PC has, you know, the average gaming PC is definitely going to be able to do that. I think we've talked in the past about a lot of these $500, $600 gaming rigs besting the PS4 and the Xbox One. Having said that, though, you know, if I think about PC games, Battlefront to me is, I hate to say this, it's a shallower game than a Battlefield. And to me, it's more of a multiplayer jump in and have fun. I could be totally wrong, but I think a lot of people might gravitate towards this is a jump in, play a couple hours with your buddies game, not a competitive pro sport like some of the games like, you know, Battlefield, Call of Duty, and whatnot. You see that done a lot on PCs. I guess on consoles too now, but I don't know. It just seems like a couch game to me where you jump, you sit on the couch, and you know, I don't know. Those are my two cents. Any closing thoughts on that, Zeus?
The only thing I'll say is, you know, I'm giving some strong thought to playing it on PC, just because I, you know, at the end of the day, I'm still going to love playing something like this with a mouse and keyboard over a controller. I know that's an age-old discussion. You know, I will say, you know, gaming rig-wise, again, I won't fully get up on the soapbox that I'm typically on, but, you know, one of my gaming PCs now is an Alienware Alpha, which cost me $500 from Best Buy. You can find it slightly cheaper elsewhere. It's got the same innards as a lot of gaming laptops that are out there. It's just less expensive because it doesn't include a display. I anticipate it's going to be a fine gaming PC for a couple of years, and a lot of the parts are upgradable. So, you know, these things are out in the market now, and a few other. These are the Steam boxes that wound up getting released, regardless of Steam OS. Regardless of the fact that Steam OS was not ready to go. So there are a few vendors out here who have boxes like this, and you can just go grab one. To me, as easily as going in and picking up a PS4 and Xbox One. So that's why I'm giving it some thought. DB, as far as what you mentioned, you know, details on exactly how to make sure you get into the beta, there is pretty much absolutely zero information on EA's website as to what do you need to do to get into the beta. They just say that, you know, stay tuned to this webpage, and that details of how to get into the beta will be forthcoming in the weeks ahead.
You know, Zeus, I think I'd love to get your thoughts and impressions, maybe in a future show, of your new Alpha PC, gaming small $500 gaming PC. I know a number of companies have done that. I think the one thing with PCs is they're a lot more complicated than a console. Although the Xbox One kind of breaks that tradition. At this point, if you guys don't mind looking at the time, I'm going to segue into our topic of the week, Destiny 2.0. And I'm going to ask Zeus. I know DB and I have played around with Destiny 2.0. Have you had a chance, Zeus, to play around with it at all? And do you have any thoughts about it?
I have not. And on this segment, I'll definitely be more in receive mode. I might have a couple questions for you guys, but I am definitely one of the left behind with Destiny. And actually, I'll pose that as a pitch you can make to me. You know, my problem with Destiny is it is one of those games that requires a level of keeping up with the Joneses, right? It's not it doesn't necessarily support the way I approach games, which is I'll play a game as long as I want to. I'll put it on a shelf for a couple months. I'll get back to it. You know, the game's never going to go away. I bought it, right? But Destiny, in order for you to play effectively in a multiplayer, in a co-op environment, really requires, say, that I keep up with your level, right? Or that you keep kind of a noob character to step down to playing with me. And so I just didn't stick it. For me, it's not a heavily intense co-op game. It's just something I pick up and play from time to time. So does 2.0 change that formula, and should I get off my duff and get back into it?
Well, I would say from my perspective that I look at Destiny a lot like I look at Terrorist Hunt. I mean, we both really love Terrorist Hunt. And it, as a way of, hey, let's go run some strikes and we'll just talk, shoot the breeze, and we'll do some strikes and get some rank up, And there's a point in Vegas too where you're just gaining experience. You've unlocked all the pink, bandanas and everything, and you're just playing, and you're, I know people who are ranked, 20, 30, 40, but they don't get anything. It was just fun to get online and play. But the thing I would say about Destiny 2 is it's fun to go back, and I actually started going back and playing the single player again, just to see how they've tweaked it and nuanced it and made it feel better and made it seem make more sense and kind of, tried to fix some of the dialogue here and there, and I thought they've done a pretty good job. So somebody just picking it up now will really, get into it. I think one of the things with Destiny is too that to be able to drop in and drop out, so I can go start patrols, or I can start a strike, not so much a strike, but I can start a patrol or start a single player mission, and any of my friends can jump in. Like I had Jetty jump in. I was trying to get my character through some levels, and so did DB. DB dropped in with a higher character and helped me on my way to the Black Guard. And that drop in, drop out co-op is really works well as just doing co-op missions together, which they call strikes. So I think from that perspective, I think it lacks some of the big team battle like a Battlefield 4 or Battlefield 3 has, where you can jump in and try to take that hill with your buddies, going all the way back to the original Battlefield. And it does miss that because, you're really up to three characters co-op, right? So, and there's no type of private matches, and I think the biggest matches are 6-on-6 and Crucible, if I remember correctly. So it does miss that big team battle aspect that was so addictive with the Battlefield, or is so addictive with the Battlefield series. But let me pitch it over to you, DB. 2.0. You downloaded it. You played that game. You couldn't get it on Tuesday. Did you actually get in there and start running around and looking at all the changes? And what do you think if you did?
So yeah, I did. I spent Wednesday putzing around in it, fired it up a little bit even before I went to work on Wednesday morning just to see what the interface changes look like. So Zeus, I think in terms of whether or not this brings people back to Destiny, I think that if this is how they had set it up when they released it last year, it would have decreased the amount of people that got turned away from it. One, the interface stuff is a whole lot nicer. You can pick up bounties, basically side quests, from the tower from the same place you used to, but now you don't have to go back there. You don't have to sit through two more loading screens to go back to turn in the side quest. You can just turn it in while you're out in the field. You can flag. Again, these are a lot of kind of MMO pieces. So for people who got into Destiny because of Halo and Bungie and that pedigree, the shooting is still the same. I think what they've spent a lot of time on in this 2.0 is more lessons from Blizzard in terms of tracking quests and being able to pull up your ghost and see your quest progress throughout the time, and not have to expanding your vault size and dividing things up into vaults so that you don't have to kind of continually just play the Tetris inventory game from Resident Evil 4 in order to save all the stuff that you want to save. The light level piece, the idea of leveling, it goes back and it's XP again. It's XP until level 34. I played around. I had a level 30 character and ran a Nightfall Strike, and by the time the Nightfall Strike was over, I had a level 32 character. And I think what I would say, I've played Destiny quite a bit. I am, in a group, a clan, and we have an active group me chat with Destiny going on, and they are way more active. I mean, they were Sherpering people, like kind of helping people through the hard modes of the raids and the big multiplayer events in order to try to get everybody to get all their achievements for the year. Which is cool, and it's neat that there's a community for that. And I kind of got caught up in it, and then I spent, and then I realized that, you know, kind of like what you were saying, Zeus, that that's not the way that I found the most enjoyment out of Destiny. I found the most enjoyment out of Destiny kind of like Gray has, in terms of it's fun to go in and play and have a side conversation going at the same time. You know, the Crucible, the PvP stuff is good and solid. Last night I played with a 6-man team. We all went in. It was, went in and played some of the new modes. There's a Rift mode, which isn't quite Capture the Flag, but similar, where you get a charge, you know, you capture an energy burst or something, and you have to get to a certain point on the map to cache it, basically, to bank that energy burst. And so there's a lot more coordination and stuff going on there. It was also, for a team that knew what they were doing against us, we got waxed pretty quickly. So it could be a haves and haves not in that mode relatively fast. I also ended up playing the new Mayhem mode, which is a lot of kind of superpowers and grenades and less guns. And that is pretty frantic, but it's also pretty fun. It really depends on what you like to do. And I think for people that have fallen off Destiny, it's not a bad time to come back. That even if you've only played the vanilla stuff and you're not going to buy Taken King, it might be worth exploring in, because it's, I don't know that it's something where you need to keep up. I think if you hit a threshold where you can run strikes with friends or, have a good set of guns for the PvP stuff, it's probably okay. But, great, so you didn't buy the Taken King, and you're not planning on it, but you've started to play around in 2.0. Is it calling you back, or are you kind of glad to say, okay, now that I understand it, I'm glad to move on?
Yeah, I think it's just cool to see how all the improvements they've made. And I truly enjoy, even though we know it, the cutscenes aren't the best, and the stories, because of the short time they had to rewrite it or to re-script it, isn't the best. I really think that they've done a good job, and it's just fun to go back and see, hey, if I've dismantled an exotic, I can buy it back now. You know, or I don't have to wait for Xur to come with something. If I've already earned something, I can go to the catalog or at the blueprints or whatever they're calling them, and I can buy some more of them. So it doesn't trick me that way. I do love going through the 20 co-op missions and just putzing around. But, having bought the first two expansions, they were great, but I just don't feel like my first $40 was worth the as much as what the original game was worth. So I'm sure that Taken King is going to be a lot of fun. I'm not a Crucible player. I don't get the feeling that it's going to be 10 to 15 single-player missions in the Taken King. So, and $40 is a lot for me. So if it goes on sale in the future, I'll probably buy it. But we got, my own personal fall buy list, I got Forza, Halo, Rainbow, and Battlefront. That's 4 games in 4 months. So I'm going to be pretty busy. And I've been playing Destiny since day one. That's been my weekly, either Wednesday nights or Sunday night game. I want to try some new stuff. I don't want to be a one game guy, So that's kind of where I think they've done a great job listening to the community, making changes, and I applaud them for that. But I think it's time for me to kind of, I don't get a lot of time to play, so I want to expose myself to some other games, if that makes sense. But I don't know. Anybody else have, DB, anything else to say on this topic? I think over the last couple of weeks I've said everything I wanted to say on it.
No, I think, again, you and I came from different spots in it, that I didn't buy the DLC at all and knew that it really didn't seem worth it, that the 3 quests or the 5 quests that you get certainly wasn't worth it. I've had a good time. I picked up the the pre-order in the middle of August, and I've spent the last few weeks going through all that both of those DLCs had to offer. And that was, you know, I kind of wrapped up. It was good, but I'm glad that it came with a package. I don't think that they make a strong case for DLC. I mean, that the way that they've set it out, you know, I think especially if it's something that you can hold off and buy later, you're going to get a better value out of it. Or even hold off until next year when they package all that stuff back up together again, and then you get, you know, two games in there. I enjoy it. It's fun. For me, it scratches kind of a Borderlands Diablo-ish itch because of the social aspects of it. And, you know, but even, I'm laughing because even listening to you talk about it, Gray, you know, the idea of, you know, blueprints and exotics and breaking things down and Xur, and there's this whole other language and dialogue that comes along with it. And Zeus, how much of that vocabulary made sense to you? You know, is this a haves and have-nots, that the people that are in Destiny are glad to be in Destiny, but does it get too far up its own universe, let's say, to make it inaccessible for new people?
Definitely. There's an accessibility problem. And maybe problem isn't the right term, but there's an accessibility issue, even for people who play it, right? Like, for me, so I play the game, right? Or I play the games, like Gray mentioned, you know, having limited time, like, just where I was before the move, where I was commuting 5 hours a day, like, I had no time to be Googling anything or reading online about what a lot of these terms meant. So even for me on the CAG forums, when you guys were trying to set up co-op and were trying to be inclusive and invite people in, I just didn't get all the jargon. Like, it's going to make me sound like a complete noob, but like, I'm not entirely clear on like what a strike is. Like I can't tick off in my head like the 10 characteristics or factors that define a strike, or what it means to get into it, or what needs to be done and coordinated beforehand. You know, I can afford the time to load a game, show up in a game, and be invited, right? Now the part of Destiny where, you know, you meet somebody, you know, at the Spire or whatever, and you just take off on a mission, and they show up in space with you with their scout craft or whatever, I got that, but all the additional, like, special stuff, like, I just didn't have time. So that leads me to one of the questions I wanted to ask, and I know we're trying to get this wrapped up, but just real quickly, so the enhancements that come in 2.0, do those all facilitate a better multiplayer / co-op experience, or do any of them help with single player?
I think I hear what you're saying, and I think they went to great lengths in 2.0, and we haven't seen it all. We'll see some this Tuesday. We'll see the remaining of it. But they have, in my opinion, and I'll let DB have the last word on this, in my opinion, they have made the game for a new person. By the way, $60 to get all three downloads and the original game is a phenomenal price. If you're still hanging out there on the fence, the $60 package is just a phenomenal package. Get it. That being said, they have gone to extreme measures to make the game more accessible, in my opinion. They're simplifying materials, they're simplifying ranking, they're even giving you almost leading you by the hand and not leaving anything up to guesswork anymore. So you know, I have these quests, I can do these next things. And, you know, there's other games that do this very well, and I think this first attempt at questification that goes all the way back to your very first mission has been done really, really well. Having gone through, I would say, probably 25% of the single player again with a new character, I personally think they have done a very good job in that. Again, I can't experience it new again because I played it for a year, But in my opinion, they've done a phenomenal job. Anybody jumping in today, there's going to be a lot of stuff they miss, a lot of the history they missed because a lot of the confusing things, getting light to rank up, all of that they're going to miss. It's just going to be a simpler, more streamlined system, and they're not going to have to go through probably, you know, almost three revs we've gone through as it's been tweaked. The original game, the first release, and then the second you know, House of Wolves release, everything was tweaked during those three, and we had exotic, not exotic shards, but we had radiant energy and radiant shards, and it kind of got a little crazy there for a while. All of that's been simplified. That's what I think. I think new players coming in are gonna, it's gonna be a lot less confusing. DP, I'll let you have the last word on that.
Yeah, I mean that it's a good time to start fresh in the game. You know, I've loved my experiences, but at the same time, you're completely right, Zeus. I have had to spend more time outside of game figuring out what to do with things. And Gray brings up the shards and energies. And at one point, there were multiple different currencies. And then they release a patch, and those currencies are no longer good. But now you need a different type of thing to collect, a new MacGuffin to collect to be able to rank things up. All of that is getting condensed down in. You know, you don't have as many multiple currencies. That's getting condensed down. Even the, you know, part of leveling up your weapon. This is a conversation that World Voyager and I were having from the forum, the CAG forums, that you used to have, you know, different types of material that would level up your weapon, and depending on your class, you only had material from that class. Now it's just armor. You get armor materials, and so regardless of what class you're in, you know, it can be used. And so they're really kind of breaking that down. The quest stuff walks you through a whole lot more. Even the strikes, which are like a three-man, like, longer level, where there's mini-bosses and a final boss at the end, you know, and it's designed for three people. There's a couple of those that I only did through playlists and not in the story. And so now in 2.0, they pop up as little available quests that kind of talk you through and walk you through them. And so they're designing it in a way to kind of move you through all the different ins and outs, you know, the patrols and the strikes, and doing all that within the game piece. You know, I think that would be... It makes it a good time to come back in, you know, whether or not it is enough to hook you. And I think, truthfully, what will happen is if people do come back or the new people come, you're going to get a sub-segment of it that is going to dive in and treat it like a massive multiplayer game and, you know, really eat up all the minutiae. And there's some people who are going to treat it like a single-player or a co-op game and work your way through the story and set it back on the shelf and say, yep, that's good gameplay, and it made a little more sense than the last time. So yeah, I don't know. I'm sure we're going to talk about it some more, but yeah, it's nice to have three diverse opinions on it here, because it is a mess sometimes. But it's my mess. So... on that, I will kick it back to you, Gray, and head us out.
Any final words, Zeus, before we wrap up the podcast?
No, I think we covered it all.
All right, well, thank you for listening to the podcast. On behalf of DBQ Hams and Zeus Adamus and myself, Greylock3491, we appreciate you listening. If you want to share your thoughts with us, or even join us on the podcast, head over to bandofgamers.net, and you'll see a post for every one of the shows, also a post to sign up if you'd like to be a guest attendee on the podcast. And you can also email us if you have some thoughts, you want to email them to us. We can even read them on the air. Our email is podcast@bandofgamers.net. And with that, thank you very much for listening to the show, and until the next time we meet, peace.